So, Danny, we've just entered into the Ides of March. Do you remember what critical Shakespearean play this comes from?
Not even a little bit. I
So,
am
this is
not an
from,
English major.
oh, well, this is from Julius Caesar, but I am curious, while we're talking about Shakespeare, do you have a favorite Shakespearean play or like a line from Shakespeare that you like?
What's the play? Oh, A Midsummer's Night. That's one. Yeah, I like that one, and I like all the spin-offs that come from Shakespeare plays as well. I think that's pretty fancy.
So would you say that when you go to a play, you like some of those plays that have kind of mistaken identities as a central theme?
Absolutely.
Because I was going to say that's in Midsummer Night's Dream, that's one of the big things, is kind of that people pretend to be somebody that they're not in order to try and win romance or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's a good time.
Yeah. See, I would say I'm a little bit more into the dramatic side of Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah. Why is that?
Yeah. Like, I kind of like Hamlet quite a bit because he's a brooder. He's got a lot on his mind, you know. So he's really struggling with a lot of stuff. Plus, he
Is
gets to
that what
see a
you're doing off
ghost.
camera?
Yeah. He gets to see a ghost from time to time and gets to hang out with him. So.
That's good to know. I'm glad to know that you're off camera brooding.
Yeah, do you know what the ghost would like to talk to Hamlet about most of the time?
I don't.
He wants to know when the bell's gonna ring. Danny, as we go into a new year, we've had a lot of changes in the state of Utah this year. One in particular is we have a new governor.
We do. We have Governor Cox now and no more Governor Herbert.
And as you can imagine, as we've had turnover in the executive branch, that goes with it a lot of different positions that are kind of changing as well. Today, we're able to talk with one of our guests. We've got Brittany Cummins, who's the new education advisor to Governor Cox.
Yes, absolutely. So while we loved working with Tammy Piper, we wish her well. I don't know, is she retired now? Is that what she's doing?
Oh no, she's a big wig now.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we're going to welcome Brittany Cummins. Brittany is the Senior Advisor of Education to Governor Spencer Cox. She graduated from Brigham Young University with her bachelor's in secondary education, focusing in biology. For the past 6 years, she has served as a board member of the Utah State Board of Education, filling as a vice chair position for the last 4 years. Concurrently, Cummins served on a local public charter school board. Her favorite place to be is in a classroom with high school students, and she's worked with the One Refugee High School program at Cottonwood High School. Cummins and her family reside in West Valley City. Welcome, Brittany.
Thank you.
So we know you're a bigwig too, so we're glad to have you on our podcast as well, especially since we just learned a little bit about your background. But as a guest on the podcast, one of the things that we like to do is we like to get to know you a little bit beyond your bio. So we've got some hard-hitting questions from Utah school students. Are you ready to answer some kid questions?
I am ready.
All right, well, let's jump in, Brittany. Our first kid question is,
What is the best Slurpee flavor?
Slurpee. I haven't had a Slurpee in a long, long time. But I would say probably a mix of grape and cherry.
Oh, you are not the first mixer on our podcast.
That one sounds like it should be called the cough drop. Yeah, we've had a lot of mixers, haven't we? Nobody seems to just go for one Slurpee flavor. All right, well, that's interesting. Our second kid question is,
What's your favorite game to play?
I love to play a good game of Risk. And I always let everyone know before we start that I will win and conquer the world. You know, Risk is my favorite board game.
World domination. I like it.
Yeah, no, that's the trick. Risk around our house causes hard feelings though, because everybody wants to dominate the world, so.
I always say before we start a family game that, like, well, for the next hour, we're not family.
Yeah.
We're competitors and I'm gonna win.
All right, let's jump into our final kid question.
What is your favorite picture book?
My favorite picture book, and I don't know the exact title of it, but it was a Sesame Street stories A to Z. And so it's every letter of the alphabet had a little Sesame Street story to it. I loved that story growing up.
Aww.
Each one was had a story, anyways, along the letter of the alphabet. But
oh, that sounds like a great one.
So fun.
Well, Brittany, we appreciate you doing that with us. I know that that's a fun way for our audience to get to know you a little better. And especially, we're glad that you're here to tell us a little bit about your new position and what that kind of entails, and maybe a little bit about your vision of what you can do in this role. Maybe as we get started, would you just share with us just a little bit of what it means to be the Senior Advisor of Education and what that kind of looks like on a daily or kind of day in, day out basis?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I'm really actually quite excited about this position. I'm still trying to figure out the day-to-day things that are part of it, but what is so exciting to me is the opportunity to really talk to, meet, and listen to a whole bunch of people involved in education across the state. Education governance is pretty broad and big in our state. And there's a lot of people involved with it. Education is really important to our state and to parents, families, teachers, everyone in the state. And so I get the chance to talk to people. I get to meet people and hear what they're experiencing and bring all of those things that I hear together and use the information that I hear and advise the governor on education policy and direction that he would like to speak to across the state. So it's really exciting. Most of my experience has been involved in K-12 education. And so I really enjoyed the opportunity to meet and many of the presidents of the institutions of higher education across the state recently. And that's been fascinating to hear about their goals and their vision for students and access. I mean, it's just, it's a fun job. And so I've been enjoying it so far. And I hope as I come to understand better my role to really engage those voices across the state and help the governor to lead out on some important issues that might impact the entire state.
All right, Brittany, it sounds like you're enjoying your new role. So maybe you could share with us, in your opinion, how are we doing? What is the state of education in Utah? What have your recent experiences been telling you?
Well, I think for the most part, education in Utah is a very good thing. It's a positive thing. I mean, if you look at the comparative statistics across the nation, Utah usually scores fairly high. And so just looking comparatively, we're doing good things in Utah. I think of it this way. Sometimes in my role as a parent, I spend way too much time trying to be critical of my children. Like, oh, you know, wipe your feet, wash your hands, yeah, do your homework, you know, and all of those little things that I feel like are part of my responsibility as a parent so that my children will grow up and be responsible and fantastic adults, right? and I think sometimes, you know, in any type of a governing role, we oftentimes spend a lot of time looking critically at those things that we are addressing. And so we spend a ton of time across the state talking about the difficult things like, oh, you know, if only this was more efficient or we had more funding or we, you know, on and on and on, right? But I think for the most part, education in Utah is good. We have some amazing teachers. We have some really good students that are excited to be in classrooms, and we have a really engaged parental group of parents out there who want to see good things happening for their students. And I think with all of that combined, I mean, we can't help but do good things, right? And so I think the state of education for the most part is good. We have some work to do, and unfortunately we spend a ton of time focusing on those points of improvement, but they're important points to make. And so I think as we move forward, I hope that we can kind of keep those two perspectives equally yoked together as we look for improvements and find those places for improvement, but also don't forget, like, wow, Utah's a great place to live and it's a good place to go to school.
Well, I appreciate lofty goals and always wanting to do better and improve. I think it's really nice to hear the good things that are happening and kind of focus, especially after the year that we've all had, or the year and a half, I don't even know now, that there are good things happening in education in Utah. And I'm sure the teachers will appreciate hearing that as well.
So yesterday, Brittany, I was in my neighborhood kind of walking, and I ran into a little family, and one of the kids was talking about, she's just transitioned from being homeschooled to going into public school. Mm-hmm. And the comment that she made that was really fun, she kind of said, I had no idea what public school would look like because I've only had my own experience of kind of just learning at home with my mom. And she said, public school is nothing like I thought it would be. She said, my only frame of reference was kind of watching sitcoms or something, right? Because I didn't have any older siblings that had gone to school, and I was kind of the first one. And I kind of turned to her and I said, just so you know, this year may not be the best year to judge what public school looks like. Maybe you can just share with our audience just a little bit about some of the changes that have happened this year in public education because of the pandemic, and maybe a little bit of what the governor sees moving forward as we kind of progress through the rest of the pandemic and out of it.
Yeah, I think we've all had to make some significant adjustments to school. And you know, this, the perspective you're sharing with your neighbor where she is adjusting home from school to public school. And I think there's a lot of families experiencing just the opposite, that where they're adjusting from being at school all the time to what that looks like to be learning in your home. And so, yes, there's definitely been a lot of adjustments, family members, teachers as well. I think there's been a lot of lessons learned this year on what school could look like. What are the positive things that we've seen as teachers have made adjustments to use technology in their classrooms? Also recognizing the limits of that technology, seeing them very clearly, those limits played out on not just access, but the how easy it is to connect to a student over the internet versus in a classroom, or understanding the context of kind of the classroom environment changes, you know, from online to in class. And so I definitely think there is a lot of things that we've learned, a lot of things that are just have been adjusted for learning environments. And I'm hopeful that this will be a catalyst for great improvements in our ability to meet student needs, individual needs across the state. I mean, I recognize the difficult circumstances that this has been. I have been teaching, you know, up until January. And so I don't want to at any point make light of that, but I do think that some of our most difficult circumstances are some of our best life teachers. And moving forward, recognizing what are the benefits of technology and what are the limitations of it, and how best can I apply that as a teacher? So I think there's a great opportunity for the system as a whole to individually look at those opportunities and move forward with them.
Yeah, it's interesting. As we kind of considered what school looked like at the end of last year, a lot of people were saying, well, it's tough to judge switching from in-person to a completely online environment just over a weekend, right? Mm-hmm. It's almost like you just pulled the emergency brake on a fast-moving train and it stopped for a little bit. And so you're not really trying to figure out what's the best way to travel now. You're just trying to figure how to get the train going again. And this year, we're seeing more of what you described, how teachers are starting to figure out what's working and maybe what isn't working in the current environment. And we are starting to find some of our best practices. And we're moving towards that way of maybe that shift of school may not always look like it did a year and a half ago. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, that we can find what things are working and what things can improve.
Yeah. And can I add something to that?
You bet.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that I was really excited about just from my own personal experience is, you know, here's something I had to do online because of this new environment. But what if I did that long term? Then it gives me this much more time to be one-on-one with students in an environment where I didn't have that before. And so, yeah, I think teachers are at that point where they are able to look at, okay, here's a benefit that I can apply long term, even in an in-person classroom and using technology. So it's exciting.
Kind of going along with what you're saying, Brittany, I think back to an experience I had. Part of my internship was with an online charter school, which I was so worried, like, how do they do school 100% online? And I was really interested to see how it all worked, and it worked. And there are some students that thrive in the online environment. And so as we're expanding what we do as teachers and what works and what doesn't work, we can really accommodate for all sorts of learner differences. So I think that that's kind of a positive thing that's come out of this situation, is that we've seen that some of our students are really great online learners, and it can provide them more time for other things, just like it can for teachers. All right, we are here with Brittany Cummins, and we are talking about the state of education in Utah. We'll be right back after our break.
Hey, listeners, we have an exciting announcement to bring to you. You've seen us on the web and on TV for years, but now UEN is available in the palm of your hand.
Download the UEN app from the Apple Store or Google Play to get all of your UEN essentials.
With the app, you can listen to this podcast on demand, watch locally produced segments, share stories to social media, and more.
Download the UEN app for free today.
So we're back with Brittany Cummins, and she is the senior advisor in education to Governor Cox. And she's just recently taken over her role, as the governor just assumed his position in the beginning of January. And that's kind of an interesting time, Brittany, because you're right in the middle of a school year. So you've kind of, the school year's already kind of gotten off on its track, and it's kind of moving forward. And now here you come in a new role with a new governor, and he has his priorities and some of his ideas. Maybe what can you share with us as far as your agenda for the rest of the school year? What do you kind of see happening as we move forward through June this year?
Yeah, definitely. I think just speaking directly to some of the struggles the schools are facing with COVID, I think the intent is for the governor to do everything that he can to make sure that vaccines are becoming available to those most vulnerable across the state, so that, you know, school can move forward in the most in-person way as possible, if that's a word. but I think that's currently the focus, is making sure that we get ahead of this pandemic and make sure that the disruptions to student learning is as small as possible. A lot of the governor's education priorities extend a little bit beyond the school year. A lot of them are looking at some projects or ideas that he'd like to see come in place over the next year or so. A lot of that has to do with funding, making sure that the system is adequately funded. We look at equity. Are students across the state able to access resources, or are they limited in certain areas depending on where they live? The governor would like to focus on early learning, making sure students are prepared for that first day of kindergarten so that they can ask questions like Slurpees and things like that, right? but making sure they're ready for kindergarten. Teachers are really important to Governor Cox. How do we make sure that the system is funded correctly so that teachers are compensated correctly? To quote him, he wants it to be a destination occupation, and making sure that it's an attractive place to be, both financially and fulfilling individually. Making sure that teachers have training opportunities and that we recruit a diverse education workforce across the state. So those are some of the things that he really is focused on that attainment goal. What is the purpose of K-12 education, if not to prepare our students for their futures, and making sure that future opportunity is accessible to all of those students in whatever form of post-secondary education that might be attractive to each student. And so those are some of the long-term focuses of the governor, as he really looks at making sure that our system is efficient, well run, and is meeting the needs of individual students across the state.
Absolutely. What do you see as the future of technology in our schools?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we are seeing, is that it's an important role. You know, I think before, is pre-COVID a word now? Pre-COVID and post-COVID yet? I don't know. But I think, you know, pre-COVID, we talked a lot about technology in the schools, right? We there's a lot of initiatives that focused on devices in schools and those kinds of things. And I really think a lot of those early initiatives prepared us to adjust, right? We were able to adjust in a very resilient way when COVID did end up hitting. And I think COVID has been able to teach us about the limitations of those opportunities. And so I think all of that together moves us forward into a system where I think teachers are ready and able and have had the training and are ready to move forward in a very positive way to find their own efficiencies in their classrooms using technologies that are beneficial to their students as they seek for individualized instruction and more efficient ways for them individually as teachers to do their jobs. And so I think technology is going to play an important role, but I think we've learned about COVID has helped us to recognize the importance of that teacher-student connection and not, you know, leaning on technology to kind of substitute for that connection that teachers make.
Yeah, I think we'd all agree that technology is a substitute for no teacher. But I have to say, for example, today my son is home sick and he's able to Zoom right into his classroom for his math lesson, you know, and so it was all set up ahead of time. I just had to know where to log on and just let my kiddo's teacher know that he was going to be sick today, and it was ready to go. So that is pretty magical. And as a teacher, I always hated trying to figure out the absent day work, right? Yeah. Like when a kid would come back from an absent, trying to figure out all the things that they needed to make up. And it's so nice because they can kind of do it in real time because they're not so sick that they can't log on to Zoom.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, Danny, as you're talking about that, you know, one of the big fears about last school year and the beginning of this school year is the learning gap potentially that we might face, right? Mm-hmm. Where students, by transitioning very abruptly, may have fallen through the cracks, and we might have had some of those kids that kind of maybe didn't get all the resources that they needed. You know, it's interesting, Brittany, as I read through your bio just a little bit, you've dealt with several refugee programs and different groups that maybe are underrepresented and maybe face some of that digital divide that we're talking about just a little bit, or that learning gap. Can you share with us just a little of your background in working with those populations and how you think that will benefit you as you move into this new role?
Sure. I have to say that was the hardest part about deciding to move into this new role was saying goodbye to my students. It makes me cry every time I think about them. But they're fantastic. I've been able to work part-time at Cottonwood High School with a program called One Refugee. One Refugee is a scholarship program that works with college students and provides mentoring. They're able to hook them up with internships and it works with them for a whole 4 years as they work through either community college and then transfer into a university setting. But it's a really good program. And so a couple of years ago, they decided to look into the option of backing into a high school program to help to prepare students for that college experience. And one of the main goals that we had was are those first year freshmen ready for English 1010? And what can we do to help, you know, give them some academic English instruction as well as, you know, help them through the process of applying for college and, you know, all those other things that they might miss as first generation students in the country and trying to navigate all of the higher ed stuff. And so it was a great program. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And it was an honor, truly an honor to work with the students who I was able to interact with. And I would have to say that, yeah, it was very interesting to see some of the struggles that they ran into when the school closed down. Many of them didn't have reliable internet service in their home. And so they would go to a library or go next to another building that had better internet service than their building did. And so that was a struggle for them, especially when we were 100% online. Yeah, others felt like they had to get jobs outside of what they were working on in school to help support their families. So they had all this time, and so go and get a job. And so it was a struggle for many of them to stay focused on education, but it was a fantastic opportunity. But it was the most amazing part was to really experience with them their resiliency and the resiliency that had been taught to them by their parents and how important education was to them and the opportunities that they had. They were fantastic students, but definitely making sure that they had the resources was an important part of them being able to accomplish what it is that they'd set out to do. So,
what a great story, and what a great program to help students as they're kind of navigating through multiple worlds, right? And they're trying to establish themselves and do all the different things that a lot of our students probably don't even consider as being challenges that somebody might face. So Brittany, as we kind of wrap up our interview, we wanted to just explore, you've been in the position now for a few weeks and you're starting to meet lots of different folks around Utah. Maybe if you could just share with our audience one of the stories or one of the people you've connected with and maybe how that's had an impact on you in your new position.
Thank you. Just the other day, I had the opportunity to visit with John Arthur. He is Utah's Teacher of the Year this year, and he's been teaching at Meadowlark Elementary School in Salt Lake City School District. And he is a fantastic teacher. I had the opportunity to meet him actually previous to this, and I was able to see some of the YouTube videos that he does with his students. He's actually fantastic. He knows how to connect with students. But I think one of the amazing things to hear him talk about is his optimism. Even in the middle of all of this really big struggle, he talks about his students and the connections that he's made with them, even in a 100% online environment in Salt Lake. And he does have the opportunity to have a few students in his classroom regularly, but he's still been able to reach through that computer screen and touch the lives of those students in his class and really connect with them and make a difference in their lives. And I think that's what's so exciting is when we have teachers who love what they do and their students feel it. And I think that's what leads to the good things that are going to happen in our state as we continue to build on those individual successes and individual classrooms for each student. And it's exciting. It's exciting to hear their optimism and to share in that and to hopefully to project that voice out across the state. So.
You know, one of the things that Danny and I talk about all the time, Brittany, is that we think that one of our roles is just to be a microphone for the good things that teachers are doing, that they just need more people to hear about not only the great people that they are, but the wonderful things they're doing for kids. And I think that you'll play that role in your new position. We're excited to be able to follow along and be part of your journey as you go into this position.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for being on the podcast today, Brittany. It was great getting to meet you virtually. And, you know, we're here to wish you luck.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time. This is a lot of fun. Thanks.
So, Danny, do you want to give the lazy teacher tech tip for today?
Ugh. Do we have to do a tech tip today?
Well, this is kind of a podcast about technology, it might be useful.
I just don't have anything today. I'm tired. My brain cells are not firing. I don't want to. Do you want to?
All right, Jared, I have a tech tip for us today.
Hooray!
So we all know my love for research and the online library.
Oh, yes.
I'm also a big Canvas fan most of the time. Basically all of the time in the last couple of years, unless I'm like late turning in an assignment, but that's neither here nor there. Nah. So there is a magical tool that's called an LTI that connects all of the Gale reference collection pieces or databases from Utah's online library directly to Canvas. You can put for example, Gale in Context Middle School right into your navigation. So hopefully students will go there to search things up, as my son says, search it up and go not on Google. You can also put it right into a page or an assignment. And another exciting announcement is that Katie Blunt and I have been working on a product page for Utah's Online Library that has that information all the way at the bottom, and tutorials and scavenger hunts, all the good things. So we'll put this in the program notes, but the URL for that resource is uen.org/UOL for Utah's Online Library.
Now that sounds like a great page for people to visit, especially when they're short on time.
Boom.
For the listening audience out there, there was a head nod in approval of my comment.
Indeed.
So I was really excited to meet Brittany and to find out a little bit about her feelings about her new position.
I know. She seems so nice and wonderful. I love her past connections to education. And it was really great to hear from her that she thinks we are doing great in the state of Utah and we're always going to be moving forward and improving. But I just really liked her fresh perspective.
Yeah, and she'll be a great evangelist for education. You know, like we mentioned in the interview, one of the biggest things that teachers need is they just need another cheerleader, somebody who has their back and wants to share their stories and let people know the great things that are going on in Utah classrooms.
Absolutely. And I think we have two really good cheerleaders in Brittany Cummins and also Governor Cox. So that's exciting to look forward to what the rest of this year and his term in office holds.
Well, we appreciate you being part of our podcast today, and we will see you next time.
Indeed. Thanks for listening.